Napa know-how.
Napa guy knows not to judge a man by his car's multicolored paint job or absence of modern gadgetry. Who cares if it's technically old enough to vote and the windows are powered by the strength of your left arm? Your monthly payment is zero, and it'll stay that way. Because with over 500,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep anything on the road. She may not be pretty, but she's all yours. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
I drink show sample by the peacher, 3 or 4 peaches per day.
What do you mean you drink 3 or 4 peaches?
Yeah, peaches, like, peaches? All this, no, peaches.
Oh, peaches,
yeah, peaches of show sample. No, I said nobody really cares about the media. They're going to have something to say. 300 pounds, Shirley Temple. I'm just going to let my game do the talking. I think some people are going to be surprised, and I can't wait to show off.
We're actually not
going to
talk about the sophomores. Let's just talk about Buddy Hield.
I can live with that. I love Buddy. Buddy's my guy.
Is the league going to be able to deal with a rookie of the year who's also the league MVP? That's what I want to know.
are you talking about Buddy?
Yeah, of course. I thought this was like all understood.
I love Buddy. Buddy had some issues in Summer League this year that I hope he rectifies. Buddy is just a great human being.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, he seems like a cool dude.
He's one of a few Sooners that I can have some respect for.
He's just like, seriously, there are so few athletes. They're so bubbly and open and kind, generally, and he's definitely one of them.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's definitely like a good person.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, everything looks good. Lux, say some words.
Okay.
Preferably something about Buddy.
How's it going with this dog? Sounds good? Looks good? Rating
no,
thing?
It's a little quiet. You put it up a little closer to your mouth.
The way that I talk.
Well, just put it closer to your mouth.
I'll put it closer to my mouth. Put it in my dang mouth.
Put it in your mouth, dude. Come on.
I'll just put it in my dang mouth.
Okay. All right, cool. So, Sam, I'll just record this guy conversation. So,
let me...
The dog is messing with the cords.
KD, first you ruined OKC, and now you're ruining our audio setup.
Like, you're really cute, KD, but you gotta.
KD, you're sending
like,
the exact
here,
wrong place. It's
wait, just take. Hey, bud.
All right.
Much easier.
Okay, cool. I'm ready to start.
I'm good.
Can you hear? Can you hear Lux?
Wait, Sam, say something for me real quick.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Yeah, he's saying something.
Okay, well, that is bad.
Well, guys, you can count to 10. That's good.
We do. We found he can count to 10, which is good.
It's oh, hey, like 50-50 most of the time.
No, it's like 1 to 10, not 50-50.
Come
on, you were doing
KD,
so well.
Come on. Bite my hand.
Hey, Victoria, will you come get Lit Pup?
Hey, get Lit Pup.
Lit Pup.
Yeah, I'm about to hear. Okay, I'm gonna try to switch.
KD, bud.
Yeah, before.
And only 11 minutes late.
This is a really good draft, dude.
You know, what draft is really good, Kanan?
2014, right?
Is that what we're talking about today?
It is.
On Almighty Ball and the Almighty Podcast?
The 2014 NBA draft with NBA draft expert Sam Vecenie. That's what I was told.
Sam, would you call yourself a draft expert?
I don't know what I would call myself. I just kind of do the thing with the draft and with the people. So I would say that that's the best way to put things.
Who are you working with right now?
I just kind of am freelancing right now. I'm doing some stuff for Vice particularly. I have something coming out with Dennis Smith soon, the now NC State point guard who will be a top 10 pick in the NBA draft this year. I mean, he's a total stud. Saw him at Adidas Nations, and he was coming back off of his torn ACL, and he's a really fun dude, a really, really fun player to watch. So I'm excited to see him at NC State this year.
ACC is going to be strong this year, man.
You would think so. NC State has Dennis and Omer Yurtseven. Duke has everyone coming in.
Yeah.
You know.
NC returns some guys, too.
NC is going to be interesting. Justin Jackson's shot looked pretty good at Adidas Nations, so that's a good sign.
Notre Dame, I guess you obviously. Got to see him.
You guys, yeah. Keenan,
what?
We're talking about the 2014 NBA draft right now on Almighty Ball and the Almighty Podcast. And
I'm sorry. All
I want in my life is for a podcast to go how it's supposed to, and I work so hard.
Can we just stay on
and
topic?
I put this audio set up. Sam, just describe this setup right here. I mean, just like the listeners, have you ever taken like a creative writing course? Because if you need to look into your autobiography, or wait, no, what is it called? A dictionary, but for fancy words. What is that called?
Like a thesaurus.
Yeah, if you need to look in your thesaurus and like so you can jot down really fast, like how beautiful this technological setup is, really quick. Then,
well, you guys have a lot stronger of a setup than I have right now. I just have, you know, like the iPhone headphones in. These guys have like a massive, what is that silver ring next to the microphone?
It doesn't do anything. It just looks cool.
Yeah, is that right?
Yeah, it's a stabilizer.
It's so that like,
stabilize sound or the stand? Because it looks like the stand also needs stabilization.
It's a little bit of both. It's so like if my man leans too far in and hits his face on the windscreen,
yeah,
you won't hear it.
I can still hear it, so I don't think it stabilized all that well.
Yeah. Well, maybe you don't headbutt it 100%. That was a little bit more.
Sometimes you just got to headbutt the microphone, apparently.
Yeah, I guess Bro, that's
true.
Zidane
Zenizan.
What do you got up there? You got Rodman. You have, what is?
It's a signature three-peat, 96 and 98, and then Bird and Magic. And then this is a sign from a hospital where priests are supposed to park. But I took it, and it says reserved clergy only, because I went by the prof for a while.
You know, if you wanted a clergy only sign, you could have just asked. I have like 15 from my dad.
Do you have rabbis only?
No, it says clergy only.
Well, is your dad a rabbi?
Yeah, probably.
Well, why would I have thought to just
ask? Wait, did you just say, probably your dad is a rabbi? Like, you're not sure if your dad's a rabbi, but he probably is?
I don't know.
Technically, he's not anymore. Now he's a retiree who like plays video games at the beach.
Good for him. That's everyone's dream.
He's grinding on that rabbi tip for 100 years.
Yeah.
And now finally freedom.
What is the samsara thing behind your head, Chris?
A Basquiat print up here.
Mm-hmm.
His face is nice.
No, that's a real Basquiat.
It's interesting.
It's a real $5 million Basquiat just chilling.
Yeah,
I see that.
Remember that time when they were like finding old Basquiat graffitis in like alleys in New York? It's just one of those where they just lifted it off the wall.
Right.
100% real.
Yeah. It's all worth it because girls think I'm really interesting and I don't even have to say anything. They can just look at
Basquiat,
my wall.
You must be
Oh my gosh, you must be so cultured.
You're very, very fascinating.
For a while.
Hmm. You see over there, I've got like the macro phenomenal basketball almanac and some wine.
Good for you, drinking wine. It's very classy.
You have to fake it until you make it, Sam.
Even I don't drink wine.
I have a predilection for shitty beer, though. I love like Miller High Life and PBR.
Ew.
Lone Star. That's what
You guys drink like Natty Light? Like,
oh, of course.
Do I look like I drink Natty
every
Light?
Every single party. That was the beer that they bought, because you could buy like 100 cases for like nothing, you know?
Yeah, for sure. We used to drink Natty. And then my favorite bar, though, at Ohio State had Keystone instead of Natty. And Keystone is just it's somehow even a level below Natty.
Yeah, Keystone is a real devastating problem.
It's like Bush Light. I think that's the worst. I don't think it gets any worse than that.
Have you guys ever had Beast? Milwaukee's Best?
Yeah,
Best. I've had that. It's pretty awful, too.
That's definitely the worst for me.
There was a summer where I was shooting on a movie in the Hudson Valley. Like, for some reason, like, the people who were just going to buy beer, they were like, all right, this is the cheapest thing there is. And, like, the whole crew was like, we'll drink less if it tastes better. Like, we don't need to be super drunk every night.
You can get a 30 of Frio Light for $14 at
HEB.
That
is so distressing.
It's so bad.
Speaking about good deals, let's talk about rookies and their contracts.
Let's
look,
do it.
I've been trying.
What a good segue, Lux. Thanks, everyone.
Sorry, we like to get to know our guests, guys.
You're listening to All My Podcast.
Oh man, this is an almost basketball podcast.
The almighty
Look,
drinker.
We're closing in on the starters. I'm coming for you, Jay.
It's sort of an asymptotic curve towards being about basketball. Like, we'll always get closer and closer to being about basketball, but we'll never
actually be about basketball.
We're the asymptote basketball show.
I love it.
Closer and closer to closer and closer
on
to
an
basketball.
Infinite curve, but never quite gets there.
And today on the asymptotic basketball show, asymptotic ball and the asymptotic podcast.
Almighty ball and the asymptotic basketball podcast.
Right. Okay. Cool. Great. What Lux said. We have guest Sam Vecenie, formerly of CBS Sports, now of Vice Sports, and would you call yourself a mercenary at this point?
Contract.
That would probably require me to be like actively looking for a job when that's just not the case.
Okay, well, cool. You know, you always have a job here at Almighty Bond. We won't pay you though. So, and there's no
cool with that.
And it won't help your career, but
I'm okay with that. Thank you.
And the reason why we would accept you with welcome arms is because, as we've mentioned in the audio, which may or may not make the cut, so to speak, we're talking about the 2014 NBA draft. And the reason we're talking about the 2014 NBA draft, Sam, is because I said that I wanted to talk about it, you know, after we recorded the other day, because we started talking about Wiggins and how people felt about him because he didn't end up being LeBron James. So now that he is LeBron James, I'm just kidding. So what do you think media consensus is on our boy Andrew Wiggins at this point? And do you think now that they have a different number one pick that it's going to be okay that he's a number two? Because my thinking, okay, was, Sam, if Carl Anthony Towns, let's say he was a fifth pick, Andrew Wiggins would always get shit for being the first pick and not being the number one man on the team.
Well, okay, can you kind of expound upon that a little bit more?
Okay. It's a lot like when Derrick Rose won the MVP. Derrick Rose was never an actual MVP caliber player. He just happened to win the MVP because that's what happened. He was never the best
player. Because everyone was really angry at LeBron.
Right, I guess.
And no one liked to vote.
So basically now everyone's going to be like, okay, when is he going to return to MVP caliber form? But he was never really there. So the same thing I'm saying is that, like the whole Kwame Brown thing, like the whole Bargnani thing, right? If Wiggins wasn't the number one man on his team, the number one scorer, the LeBron of his team, then people would get pissed off at him. But since there's a different number one pick in the draft, it's going to work out. Because it's okay
like
that
the
he's
fact
the
that, option. Yeah, like the fact that they have Carl Anthony Towns now to kind of take up a lot of the media requirements and all of the press.
Right.
Because, you know, Carl Anthony Towns is a stud. He's probably going to be one of the 20 best players in the NBA this year already at 20 years old. So Wiggins, to me, it's always been super hard with him because you look at what his package of talents are. Like, he is the elite of the elite in terms of athleticism. Like, he's putting out videos of him almost throwing down like 720 dunks. He's just super quick twitch, very, very agile, can get out in the open floor, does everything you want athletically, and has always kind of been improving in terms of his skill set, even though he's still not there yet. But once you have that like package, that first package of skills in terms of athleticism, everyone thinks that the skill set can come along in terms of shooting, ball handling, everything else, because we've seen guys like, you know, Kevin Durant improve their ball handling before, so why can't Andrew Wiggins? We've seen guys improve their shooting before, so why can't Andrew Wiggins? It's a tall ask in terms of having him improve everything because his skill level is just so relatively low compared to everyone else. But then again, you look at him, he's 21 years old. Like, he really could develop into, you know, an all-star level player. And I think he will develop into an all-star level player. It's just like he's probably not going to be that number one franchise talent on a championship team, which is what I think everyone assumed he would be whenever he was, you know, crowned the best prospect since LeBron.
Well, yeah.
I guess, what was that? 2012 was probably the start of that?
Yeah.
Don't you also think there's a certain degree to which, like, every so often, especially, I mean, in both his rookie season and last year, he'd bust out some pretty remarkable performances.
Mm-hmm.
A couple games where he'd throw down, like, 30 on just, like, pure speed and, like, some good insights and a couple nice moves.
Well, and that game he had against Golden State last year was one of the best games that, like, anyone played in the NBA last year, I thought. Like, the flashes are there.
Yeah, and I feel like they're there enough to give people like myself who are hard body on the Wiggins train a lot of hope and a lot of proof sort of evidence. But I think on the flip side, people who are a little more impatient with him can take those same flashes and be like, where is this night in, night out? Like, how is he not dropping 28 a game with this kind of if he can get that open and make those kind of finishes, stuff like that. And I think that kind of speaks to what you were saying with, like, the whole Derrick Rose thing. Like, he's established some expectations. Just like,
yeah.
There are pre-established expectations on Andrew Wiggins, which he occasionally has lived up to in game, which has only served to elevate the sort of broader expectation of him, which I think is a little bit unfair, to be honest.
Is he still the number one pick in the draft?
In the would he still go number one in the 2014 draft, are you asking?
Yeah.
I think he would, yeah. I mean, we still don't know what Joel Embiid is. Yeah, Parker Embiid's blew out his knee. Deep. You know, Gordon, no one knows. Exum blew out his knee. This draft is so depressing in so many ways because this was one of my favorite drafts in a long time. And then everyone got hurt. I think five of the top seven first seven picks missed the entire year or, you know, 3/4 of the year or something due to injury. So it's just a really disappointing draft right now that I think in the future will be looked upon as a stronger draft once these guys get healthy and get going.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking too. There's just so many injuries in the top 10 picks. The only other guy who's really played really well and hasn't had injury problems is Marcus Smart. It's been pretty good.
Mm-hmm. But even Marcus Smart's, I think, a little disappointing as of right now.
Sure, but he's a guy who's, like, hasn't been just plagued by injuries for his first, like...
He jammed his finger, though. You guys remember that?
You look at this, Smart's missed, though, like, almost 40 games in his career.
Yeah.
It's just, like, little nicks and stuff that he picks up from playing so physically because he's just such an imposing player and likes to impose that athleticism on the game. And he just plays with such a reckless abandon that he's going to pick stuff up even though he's built like a linebacker. It's just going to happen.
Yeah.
And then also, to counterbalance those like early sort of flubs in that draft, you also have a couple of good later picks in that draft that I really like. Like, Rodney Hood's a player I like a lot. Jokic is a player I like.
Jokic is awesome.
Jokic is a stud.
Did you know that, Sam? Did you know that Jokic was going to be like a top five player in this draft?
Not this good. I was always a pretty big fan of him. You know, he was terrific at Nike Hoop Summit with Emmanuel Mudiay. Just absolutely a tremendous player. And then that next year, he obviously took the massive leap in the Adriatic League that I don't think anyone really expected that sort of leap. I think even if you would ask Tim Connolly of the Nuggets, did you expect Nikola Jokic to turn into this? I don't think he would say that he expected it. But I thought that he would be an NBA player for sure. And at number 41, that's all you can really ask for.
Oh, God, his game against the U.S. a couple days ago at the Olympics?
Yeah.
Yep.
Hoo-wee!
He does. The thing with him is he's such a perfect center for the modern NBA because he knows how to – he's not the most athletic guy, but he knows how to use his feet and how to particularly use his arms and hands to make up for that lack of athleticism. Like, if you watch him out on the pick and roll or watch how quickly his hands can adjust whenever someone's trying to make a pass around him – it's really impressive. He has tremendous hand-eye coordination.
Isn't he another one of those guys?
Like, he's impressive.
Yeah. Isn't he another one of those guys like Anthony Davis who played point guard most of his life and then got a big growth spurt?
You know, I've heard something like a story along those lines. I don't necessarily know all the details on that. I think that at one point, and I've talked to him before, I think that he said that like he was a guard at one point in his career, but I don't think it was necessarily like an Anthony Davis, like freaky, grow 9 inches in like your junior or freshman year of high school thing either.
Yeah.
That's so crazy. I wonder if I've ever grown 9 inches in like a 12-month period.
It's insane.
I think, moving it somewhere else though, couldn't you see someone taking an Aaron Gordon number one now?
I was going to say, can we actually go back to Wiggins real quick, though?
Please. Because
I think that another thing...
I don't know what I'm doing. With...
Can we please go back to Wiggins so I can do your job for you, apparently?
Absolutely.
No, I'm joking.
Oh, God. I'm so happy that someone was taking this from... Please.
The reason that I think, though, that there's been a bit of a backlash to Wiggins is just this idea of analytics in the NBA and its continuing prevalence. And, you know, I am as gung-ho on analytics as I think you'll see most, like, mainstream writers. Part of the reason that I think that happens, though, is because Wiggins statistically still hasn't, you know, added the rebounding to his game as a 6'9" guy with incredible athleticism that you would hope for. He still hasn't become this tremendous passer. He still doesn't, you know, create all of these turnovers with all of his athletic gifts, and his defense can be hit or miss sometimes. Like, it seems like because of the analytics revolution, we expect all of these wings to be, these athletic ones at least, to be do-it-all Swiss Army knives.
Yeah.
When, you know, and we kind of see it with DeMar DeRozan as well, even though I think DeMar DeRozan's a little bit of a different case, just because I actively dislike watching him play basketball, just because he, you know, he does all that goofy stuff in terms of pulling up in the mid-range. And, you know, he's such a good shooter, but he doesn't shoot three-pointers. Wiggins is a little bit different because he's just a freakier athlete who can get into the lane whenever he wants, has all sort of, you know, tricky spin moves and stuff. But he doesn't rebound the ball, doesn't pass the ball, doesn't play as strong of defense as you would hope so far. And I think that that's kind of made people downgrade how good of a scorer he's been at this level. Like, he's scoring 21 points a game as a 21-year-old player with like a 46% from the field while only shooting like 30% from the three-point line. So it's really impressive that he's been able to adjust so quickly to me to scoring inside. Like, that's not an easy adjustment for a lot of 21-year-olds that are so skinny. And he's been able to do it really well. And I think that that's one thing that's going to kind of cause him to continue to grow as he moves into this next era with Karl Anthony Towns, who can help space the floor for him. You know, Chris Dunn, who can create looks for him when he's cutting. You know, Tom Thibodeau's defensive scheme, where he can, you know, hopefully develop a little bit more defensively. I think that there's a lot to be excited about with Andrew Wiggins, and I would still absolutely take him number one in this draft.
I think that people's concern is that, you know, to quote the Memphis coach at the time, I don't remember his name, but it was a quote about Rudy Gay where it was like, we want to be a champagne team, but Rudy Gay is a light beer player. And I feel like that's what people's concerns are about Wiggins, that, you know, he brings the scoring to the floor, but he's just going to be another Rudy Gay or like a Gerald Green or one of those players who puts up numbers, but because he doesn't do all this extra stuff, isn't an actual boon to your team?
Yeah, no, I totally get that. But his athleticism, his desire to be great, so to speak, that whole stuff with his, you know, mentality or whatever and inability to take over games, I think is kind of ridiculous.
Could it just be bad coaching?
Yeah, I don't even know that it's bad coaching because Bill Self is one of the best coaches in college basketball. He's just very into his own scheme, and Wiggins wasn't necessarily an elite player within that scheme. And, you know, Sam Mitchell is Sam Mitchell. He is.
That's what I was.
we'll leave Sam Mitchell alone on this podcast and just kind of move him.
You don't need to bully.
Dog, you're the host.
we'll move him to the side for a minute. And it'll be interesting to see how he develops under Tom Thibodeau, because I think Thibodeau can really help him develop those other aspects of his game and make him the elite player that I think he can be.
Well, this has actually come up in our just like car conversations about Andrew Wiggins, which come up a lot, actually. Is this idea that like Wiggins as a defender is like very hit or miss sometimes, but can be like phenomenal in a one-on-one setting. Like, he like undressed James Harden a few times in the Rockets game in a way that a few others have. And so I'm curious if you think that Thibodeau can sort of help, it sounds like you think so, can cue Wiggins into playing a more cohesive team role? Because it seems like sometimes in the one-on-one he's fantastic, but gets lost kind of in the schemes and Mitchell's scheme, or either gets lost or other players get lost. For whatever reason, it doesn't maximize his like obviously extraordinary ability.
Yeah, no, I totally think that's going to happen. Another thing to look for, I think, is the fact that I think that there's just more defensive talent on that team now. You look at a guy like a Chris Dunn who can come in, and I think he's going to be an above average defender immediately. Like, he is that good on the defensive end. Ricky Rubio is an above average defensive player. Karl Anthony Towns, a little bit, I think, overrated defensively due to the block numbers and everything, but has a lot of talent defensively, and I think that Thibodeau will continue to grow him defensively. So I think that there's a lot of talent there that will help build a cohesive unit where Wiggins will be able to slot in, because there are all these tremendous individual defenders on this team. And what Thibodeau was always really good at with the Bulls was getting the Bulls to buy into a team scheme and staying, you know, aware off the ball and really, really helping these individually great defenders become great team defenders. Yeah. So I think that you're going to see that with Thibodeau and with Wiggins and with that entire group, really.
Yeah, I actually had a question also about Wiggins. And since I spent a lot of time this year looking at this year's draft, and we talked about it already, I liked the Chris Dunn pick a lot. I think it was a really good pickup for Minnesota. Do you think that Chris Dunn specifically is going to help Wiggins sort of break out of this role, sort of what Lux is saying, how it's just sort of a he's a really superstar one-on-one guy, almost like a high school mixtape player, you know, like they should have the high school mixtape where the dude's just dunking on people and it's like playing Young Jeezy in the background. Do you think that Chris Dunn is going to be able to help him sort of fill a role on offense that's, I don't know, less individuality based, like maybe help him become even a better passer? Like, I don't know. I think that Chris Dunn's sort of a game changer in that regard.
It's going to be really hard to separate, like, the impact of Chris Dunn compared to the impact of having a real life competent coach.
I thought you said we were going to leave Sam Mitchell alone, Sam.
And really, like, Thibodeau isn't even that competent offensively necessarily. If we,
I think he's way underrated.
Teams, but like, he's still a very good coach that I think will find a way to build the right scheme for this team. It wouldn't surprise me to see a lot more posting with Wiggins against smaller guys.
Yeah.
I think you're going to see Chris Dunn do that a decent amount. I think that Rubio, I think you might see Rubio play a little bit off ball, actually, because Rubio's a really good cutter off ball, really good at, you know, accepting passes and going up immediately, you know, off the ball and getting that, you know, separation away from his defender on just like timing cuts and stuff. He's really terrific at that. Dunn's going to be able to take over as a secondary ball handler. And, you know, Zach LaVine's another guy that we'll talk about, I'm sure, at some point whenever we get back to the 2014 NBA draft. But LaVine is an interesting fit here, too, just because he really came on in the second half of last year, but I also think he has a lot of issues that will make you almost want to tie him to either Rubio or Dunn because they're such good defenders. And
yeah.
I think that having him in between Wiggins and one of those two is kind of a perfect complement for his skills. So it's a really fascinating team. This is going to be one of my favorite teams to watch this year. I just don't really know necessarily how to separate the impact that all of the growing talent and all of the new talent that is there will have versus the coaching impact necessarily.
Yeah, and I think Tibbs, the way he, like, his defensive sets, he's going to be able to sort of help overcome some of, like, the individual weaknesses, maybe able to, like, cover up for some of those, for some of those players, like Wiggins specifically.
Yeah, and I really hope that it covers up for LaVine because...
Yeah.
Oh dear.
Well, a lot of people think that Thibodeau can... A lot of people think that Thibodeau can turn LaVine into a good defender. I've heard that a lot.
Oh.
No?
It's not
okay. Happening. Well, good.
Yeah, LaVine's got some... We've talked about this before, how LaVine has like some whack habits just with the way he moves his body on offense. That whackness is redoubled over and over again on the defensive end.
Yeah.
I've been watching Zach LaVine live now. I've seen him at UCLA. Like, I've seen him now in Minnesota. He is never given any sort of damn on the defensive end from, like, any...
You know who his hero is? Jamal Crawford. That's his mentor.
It kind of says a lot, right?
Like, he said that?
Yeah.
Really?
They, like, text.
Yeah, well, I mean, if, you know... But like,
well, they're both Washington guys, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But like you were saying before, like, if you have Dunn on one side and Wiggins on the other sliding over to cover up for the LaVine mistakes and Thibodeau can put in, like, a coherent... system of backline rotation.
Thibodeau had a good defense with Nate Robinson and DJ Augustine.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he can figure this kind of ish out, and he's got
Ish. There's another one.
As many, he's got as many or more tools to play with this year than he did in most of his seasons with the Bulls. So I'm pretty confident that they can bang out both a solid offense and a real good defense the next year or two, and that my Wolves will be so good and everyone will be jealous of my Timberwolves sweater.
There good. You go.
Good. Yeah. Okay.
I'm very excited about the sweater.
All right. So it's all right. So second pick. I would think that I would probably want to go with Aaron Gordon,
yep.
But I do still really like Jabari Parker. I just think that Aaron Gordon has a little bit more upside, and it's started to come to fruition a little bit. What do you think is going to happen with Aaron Gordon under Frank Vogel? Because I can really see why he would want him to be at the three, because he could sort of start to craft him into that roaming three type, Al-Farouq Aminu or Kawhi, where he just sort of like goes and reaches and stuff. And Frank Vogel, you know, coach Paul George. Like, if you go for trying to make Aaron Gordon defensively what Paul George is now, I think that's pretty solid, and they definitely have a good defensive 4 and 5. So, I guess we'll start on the question, okay, encapsulated into one. Is Aaron Gordon number two? Would you agree with me?
I would still take Jabari, because I just really have always liked Jabari's game. I think he's just one of those tremendous fluid athletes. Like, yeah, he's explosive, but you kind of watch his movement. His movement is so incredibly fluid on the offensive end. Like, the things he can do with the ball are things that you expect of, like, 6'5" shooting guards almost. Like, he can really drive the ball. He's so powerful. He is able to shoot the ball. I think he's going to add a three-pointer at some point. He's just a tremendous scorer. I do understand why people would consider Aaron Gordon over him. I do like Aaron Gordon a lot. I think he's also a great basketball player. But for me, I would go Parker. I think that the upside is just a little bit higher with Parker.
Okay. What do you guys think?
I would probably go Gordon, because my issue with Parker is that, well, all the things you said sort of speak to like how he kind of reminds me of like young Carmelo in certain ways.
Yep.
But I just like have a harder time, I guess, in my mind, drawing the line from Jabari as is to future Jabari that I did with Carmelo to future Carmelo. Maybe that's because he missed that year and had spent the last year recovering, and I just like have bad taste in my mouth off of that. But
well, he's not Melo. I mean, I think that's pretty evident at this point.
Yeah,
Melo,
yeah.
I mean, came into the league averaging 21 points a game, could not necessarily like shoot threes consistently, but he was a little bit better than Jabari, I thought, at that.
And I guess that's
just a little bit of better scorer.
Yeah, and I guess that's what I mean, that it was easy for me with Carmelo to see that fluidity turn into productive NBA stuff. And with Jabari, it's a little bit harder to draw that direct line. Whereas with Aaron Gordon, he's not quite as there yet, and I totally see what you mean about like how Jabari's skill set fits into the NBA in a certain really clear way. But you can see how Aaron Gordon just becomes like a monster demon Skyrim creature and just like, you know, becomes like last level boss. And I don't know, if I'm making a team of the number two pick, I kind of want someone who might develop into like the Andros of the NBA.
Yeah, no, I mean, Aaron Gordon is one of those athletic freaks who also is a tremendous defensive player. I just kind of wonder about him offensively. Like, he still can't shoot at all. He's not like this elite finisher, despite the dunking. Like, he's not the best guy whenever he gets within like 10 feet of the rim. And that's a little bit scary to me. But there's a lot to like, at least, about what he can do with everything else within his game, because he is a really good passer. He does move really well away from the ball. He's a really good defender. He's like, him and Jabari are kind of polar opposite players, right? Like, Aaron Gordon is the guy that you think you can develop into the defensive stud who can add a little bit offensively and provide versatility in his game. Jabari is the offensive stud who you need to be like your number one or number two scorer that might not ever be able to add enough defensively to make him as viable as you hope. I mean, it's so hard to tell right now because these guys are 20 and 21 years old. But
and with all the injuries and stuff too, it's real hard to
exactly.
Take a picture.
It really is. I mean, you look at Aaron Gordon, he missed half of his rookie season. You look at Jabari at the torn ACL. Like, these guys are still really coming along. And it also becomes very difficult for their teams because you know, starting next summer, they really have to make a decision on, do we want to max this guy? Like, is he worth a max level contract, or do we want to let him test the restricted free agency market, or what do we want to do basically with him? It's a really tricky spot to be in for an NBA team. One, and I mean, we'll get to the number three pick in this draft eventually, who is just has put the Sixers in an impossible situation. But it's a really interesting and difficult ideal to try and figure out what all of these teams at the top of the 2014 draft, except for Minnesota, who I think is going to max Wiggins at some point, decide to do once it comes time to do it.
Well, you got a take on Jabari?
I think it's going to be interesting because, like you were saying, how this like coming year is where they're going to kind of have to like really show out, and that's how you're going to kind of figure out how these guys are playing. But again, I think that knee injuries are just really, you just never know with knee injuries. So I would probably take Gordon because of fear of another injury or something, because it's rare that dudes come back from a knee injury and are just as good, you know? Like, I mean, he's young and he totally could, but then there's also that chance that he re-injures it, that it happens to his other knee. I mean, guys who get that injury tend to get injured a lot. They just tend to have like a genetic thing with their knees. I mean, you've seen it with so many athletes before. I would probably go with Gordon just... And Gordon got hurt too, but not in the same...
What was his injury? Well, was it Gordon, foot?
He broke his jaw like fun wrestling with his brother.
Oh.
No, Gordon has fractured his left foot, whoever said that. That's definitely what happened. Nice. And then when he was younger, he also tore his ACL. A situation where it was when he was super young, and like there's some medical science out there that says maybe if you tear your ACL when you're younger, it's not necessarily as big a deal because everything is still kind of growing and it'll kind of
plasticity.
Yeah, sure, if that's the word. I am not a doctor and I don't really pretend to do that stuff.
Science man over here.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Who knows? Like, it's a really difficult thing. This stuff is all inexact at this stage.
Maybe it's recency bias too, but I mean, I don't know. The fact that he just had that injury and it was bad, and I remember thinking like, I hope he comes back from this. You just never know with knee injuries. So I would take Gordon just because I think it's a safer pick.
Wow, what a great transition from injuries into talking about Joel Embiid.
There was no other segue to make.
So I did my 76ers team previews. Sam, I know you were texting me earlier and you said that you thought that my team previews were the best recorded thing since, I think you said, Billie Jean. So anyways.
Are you talking Billie Jean King, Billie Jean, Michael Jackson? What are we thinking here?
We're talking Michael Jackson. Well, you were talking Michael Jackson, Sam. I'm surprised that you don't remember this. But you had really high praise for my team previews. And my last team preview, speaking of them – and thanks, by the way, Sam. My last team preview was the 76ers, and I asked Brian Toporek, B-Ball Insiders, if he would be willing to trade Joel Embiid for two LeBrons. And he said that it would maybe take three. So I guess, Sam, what do you have to say about that idea that, you know, if you got three LeBrons and put them all together, it still wouldn't be as good as Joel Embiid? Will certainly be his first year back playing 20 minutes a game.
I don't even know where to go with that.
Just talk about Joel Embiid.
Joel Embiid. Does anyone know? Anyone have a good idea what Joel Embiid's going to be this year? I don't. Seriously, I'm asking.
there is.
It's literally, yeah. I mean, all the signs are there that he could be great, but all the signs are there that he's not going
to
play.
But next year, though, it's like, because you're right, Sam. They're going to have to max him. Like you.
No. I mean, maybe if he plays really well this year, but like, they have to make the call this summer probably on like what they're going to do.
I think
between him and Nerlens and Jaleel, they got to figure some of this out.
They got to move at least one of those pieces.
Noel went black screen.
I mean, it's really difficult because I like all three of them a decent amount. Like, I am still in on the Jahlil Okafor train. I see no reason I see reason why people are jumping off. Like, he was a pretty disastrous player defensively, but if you give him something to play for, I can see a way that a 6'11 center with a 7'5 wingspan and really good footwork can figure it out on the defensive end somehow.
Yeah.
And he's just a total stud offensively. Like, he averaged 17 points and 7 rebounds this year as a rookie. If you look at his numbers when he actually had a competent point guard like Ish Smith, his efficiency was pretty much through the roof for what you're looking for a center. So I still believe in Okafor. I understand why you would believe in Noel, because you kind of think he might be able to play some 4 due to his mobility and due to maybe the fact that you can get Joel Embiid to shoot a little bit. And then there's Embiid. No one knows what Joel Embiid's going to be. He could be genuinely like a first-team All-NBA player.
Let's go back to 2014, the night that – or actually, I guess Joel Embiid had like 2 injuries throughout his call. Let's say that Joel Embiid didn't have any of these injuries, right? Which like sure. is the case. I mean, watching him in college, what was your impression of what he was going to be? Because, I mean, I've heard from like Tim Duncan to like Kareem, and then with now these injuries, maybe just getting a brick and like tying some string to it, that would be a more effective player than him because he's never going to be on the floor, you know?
When he was coming into the draft in 2014, if he would not have had any injuries, he would have been the number one pick. I don't think there's any doubt about that, to be honest. He just flat out would have been the number one pick. You look at the way that he moves his feet. It's like a guy that's 6 feet tall. He has tremendous fluidity in terms of the way he can attack with the ball in his hands. He can block shots. He moves well on the perimeter. He had a ton of fouling issues while he was at Kansas. I don't think he won the Big 12's Defensive Player of the Year that year, but he shouldn't have won that, I don't think. That was a mistake. But he's still, you know, this guy who can become a two-way force in the NBA, and those are exceedingly rare players. So if you think of the best-case scenario for Joel Embiid, best-case scenario for Joel Embiid is first-team All-NBA. If you look at the worst-case scenario, it's that he plays 10 games this year and re-breaks the navicular bone in his foot.
Like, oh, God.
I don't know. It's just an impossible situation to even gauge. The way that I always value things in my brain is as an expected value equation. Like,
you
kind of average the upside with the downside and the potential that he actually reaches such downside or such upside. And he's just an impossible asset to even judge. Yeah, like, I don't know how. He's an incredible talent that could be anything.
I remember when he was coming out of college, people were saying it's the best footwork they'd seen for a big man since Hakeem Olajuwon. That's what people were saying. They're saying this dude's foot fluidity is just outrageous. Like, his skills around the basket, just like scary good. But the thing is, that's such a devastating injury for a big man to break that bone in your foot, because that's what's put out so many like great big men, you know what I mean?
It's not even the foot. It's the fact that his foot goes in conjunction with a stress fracture in his back that he missed the end of the Kansas season with. So, like, you hope that the legs are okay, but then there's also a ticking time bomb in his back with stress fractures. Like, I don't know how to do that.
Well, I feel like with Embiid, he's, like, engaged with the Cloverfield effect.
Whoa.
Where just, like, there's so much ability to project either positives or negatives onto Joel Embiid from whatever perspective you're taking it, that there's like functionally no real objective or helpful analysis that can really happen until he gets on the court. You know, there's like a lot of speculation of his knee's going to explode, his back's going to turn into a dragon and he'll die or whatever. But you can't know that stuff. And so now the expectations in either direction are like so beyond sort of what's reasonable. Like, everyone seems to be talking about like, he'll be 20-10-5, or his leg will fall off.
Well, I mean, I think even after he gets to the court, you still can't have reasonable expectations about his career, because, like, he could be MVP next season, and then in the second game of 16-17, like, crack in half, you know?
Yeah, I really wonder what – if he goes out and averages, 18-10 with 3 blocks a game this year or something.
Yeah.
Just, like, all NBA numbers, essentially. What would his value around the league be? Because you don't pay guys for what they have done in the past. You pay them for what they're going to be in the future. And with Embiid, you'd have a guy that would be, I think he's 22 right now, who'd be 23 years old at that stage, coming off of an all-NBA season, but who has ticking time bombs in all of his limbs and body. So, like,
I mean, he's a big guy who gets injured, and he's always going to be a big guy who gets injured, I feel like. That's my personal opinion. I don't think that a guy who's had this many injuries at his size is necessarily that there's a really great chance that he's going to have a great, prosperous, long career after this. I just don't see it happening.
And I think in particular with that, I mean, like you were saying, Sam, like he is so amazing because of his fluidity and his footwork and sort of this degree of small level athleticism that big men just don't usually have.
Yeah.
And if these injuries negate that, then even if he can come back healthy, like will he come back healthy as Joel Embiid, the sort of freak of balanced nature ballerina devastator, or will he come back as just another sort of halfway stiff?
Yeah, and I mean, the thing about him being a halfway stiff is like, you look at what Arvydas Sabonis was whenever he came to Portland. Like, Arvydas Sabonis had a couple of incredible years in Portland, but then, you know, for the second half of his NBA career, couldn't move on the basketball floor and was still effective because he was so long and so tall and had such incredible basketball sense that he found a way to make it work and be an effective NBA starter. When in Russia, he was literally the best player in the world, possibly at a time. It's just so difficult to tell because that's kind of the skill, the talent level that you're talking about with Embiid. You're talking about a talent level that could bear itself out to be like a top 50 player in NBA history. And I think that if that talent level is wrecked by injury in some capacity, he could still be an effective NBA player. Like, you could still see a world where he plays 20 minutes a game, averages 10 points and 6 rebounds and a block and a half in those minutes, and is still like worthy of a $10 million a year contract. It's just that the range of outcomes is from, you know, literally never playing a game after tomorrow to top 50 NBA player of all time. And that's impossible. It's just impossible to gauge.
Joel and Bill Walton. M. Bill. See how it...
I see what you're doing.
Oh, okay, great. Dante Exum. Hey.
Dante
Exum. Yeah, he tore his ACL, but the same thing comes in there.
God.
Where... Yeah, no, this is
injuries everywhere. Man. It's like really sad.
And this was a great draft class.
That I totally kind of agree. Ravaged. Totally agree.
Well, and that was one of the key questions where, like, Sam, you know, has ESP, and he knew that that was one of the key questions that I was going to end up asking him, is that, is this draft going to round out so that people will forget that this is the injury-wrecked draft, and it will just end up being the one that everyone was like, oh, it's like the Iverson draft. It's like, oh, it's like the, you know, the Wade, Melo, LeBron draft. And, you know, Sam Vecenie said, yeah, he thinks that it's going to come together. But
well, here's a question. Right now, whose draft would this be? What draft would you call this right now?
The James Young draft.
Oh, God.
The Jeremy Grant
draft. But no, realistically, like, it would be the Embiid draft, right?
Yeah.
Because he's kind of the poster boy for all of the injuries in this draft.
Oh, so, okay, yeah.
This is like the what-if draft of the century.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
It's so easy to look back on that draft list and go, the NBA landscape in 2016 could look radically different were it for a few inches here and there on a couple of internal body parts.
Yep.
Yeah.
But, you know, it doesn't. So a draft does just, like, evoke so much just question. And I think, yeah, that's why Embiid is the poster child, because there are no bigger questions than Joel Embiid.
Yeah.
At least as far as player development goes.
Yeah, no, I agree.